much for inviting me here to talk. So this is really such a pleasure to meet all of you. And today, as you can see, we're talking about working therapeutically with children. So by that I mean the age group of 10 and under. And it's an introduction because it's such a vast topic, of course, that each of the things I touch on theoretically could be a day or a month in themselves. But I'm hoping by the time that you leave here, you will have some sense of how you work with children, why you work with them in that way, trying to get you to think about what you feel about working with children, what it might raise for you. That age group obviously is so specific, and some of you will probably be sitting here thinking that's not my target market for clients at all. And I quite understand that. And in fact, for me in my personal practice, I tend to work with 10 up until, you know, the oldest that can be. But I've trained in working with children. And the reason why I'm hoping you'll find this valuable is that I really believe that knowing something about how a child's mind works really can help inform your adult practice. And that's why I would encourage you this afternoon to think about everything that goes on for you. We're going to do some experiential stuff, and some people hate that. It's like, oh no, just let me stay in my seat to not move and groan. And that's great. I don't have a problem with that at all. So to keep thinking what goes on with you. There's no silly question. I'm not an expert in this. I'm not a play therapist. Interestingly enough, that's the one branch of counselling that is government regulated. You can't call yourself a play therapist unless you are registered and have qualified as such. And that's subject to a fine of up to £5,000.
I didn't realise that, Stephanie.
Yeah. Wow. So the rest of counselling, of course, you can just stick a plaque on your door and say you are.
So what age do they determine up there in a play therapist?
Up to 10.
Right.
Yeah, okay. And that really is down to, you know, child protection issues, you're working with the vulnerable. And so, yeah, it's something to bear in mind and to just think about. So, all right, let's get going. Let me just move this along. All right, so when you're becoming a counsellor for children, obviously you need to think about, what am I doing with a child? Why is it different? What are my goals? What am I hoping to achieve? And it's really important that the child themselves, when they come to you, also have an idea of why they are there, obviously, because children... Oh, you got one. Okay, come on, don't worry. Come in. Come in, come in. I've had a look at all the mental health statistics for children, and I have to say that it's enormously alarming when you consider it and when you look at these stats. So you've all got packs that I've given you. The slides are all in there in case the projector conks in or something like that. So you've got all the information you need. And all the stats there, so I'm going to have to just breeze through some things quite quickly, if that's okay, because of our time. But yeah, just looking at these, I find it quite scary. So 1 in 10 children and young people suffer from a diagnosable mental health disorder. So that, break it down, around 3 children per class. So you can imagine the implications for the parents, for the teachers, for their peer groups in the classes and how that might impact. More than half of all adults with mental health problems were diagnosed in childhood, but less than half of them were actually appropriately treated. So that's really an idea behind working with children. If you can identify a problem that a child might be having when they're little, work with them, hopefully they will then become empowered, learn to manage whatever it is that they're suffering with, so that they cope much better as adults, so we don't have that problem that perpetuates moving forward. this feels really scary, really. Over 8,000 children here in the UK aged under 10 years old suffer from severe depression. And that's hard to imagine why a child would be suffering with severe depression. And of course there are some totally acute reasons that are obvious, with sexual abuse or any sort of violence in the home and so on. But this also covers children where there may be, on the surface, doesn't seem to be any tangible, obvious reason. And the children themselves don't know, and the parents are despairing. So trying to work out why they're anxious and what's fueling that fear that they have. 7.7%, or nearly 340,000 children aged 5 to 10, actually have a diagnosed mental health disorder. Around 96,000 children have an anxiety disorder. Nearly 9,000 are seriously depressed, so not diagnosed with depression, but very sad. Nearly 5% of children have a conduct disorder, and of course that manifests in classrooms a lot. And about 70,000 children have severe ADHD, which obviously also impacts. So just having a little look at this, what children's needs are, and why I find this quite interesting is the obvious of children's needs. We all know they need to be fed, they need to be clothed, they should have a basic education. But what I notice with a lot of my adult clients is they come in and they've got some issue with parents and the way they were brought up, but they can't put the finger on it. And it's a case of, but I was looked after. If you look at my family home, I had a mum and a dad, I went to school, they looked after me, so what do I have to complain about? Why am I feeling, let's say, anxiety or whatever they're presenting with? Because a children's needs are so much more than just those basics, let's say on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. They really need love and nurturing and affection, and made to feel that they are important, that their opinions matter. So a child that falls over and hurts themselves, it's very easy to say, come on, get up, you're fine. Yeah, maybe. But in fact, that's telling them, oh, actually that hurts. Actually, I want to cry, but I'm being told I'm not really allowed to. So I better suck that up and hide what I'm feeling. A child seeing his parents fighting and nothing spoken, nothing said. And they start to think, well, was that me? Are they fighting about me? Are they going to split up? Is something going to happen? And they're scared. But the parents don't go to the child and say, oh, sorry, mum and dad, we're fighting. We were just, you know, something was going on, but it's nothing about you. We love you very much. In other words, the child's imagination is so much worse than what the reality tends to be. So a child needs reassurance, nurturing, they need physical contact and loving, and especially when it comes to boys. And in fact, if you ever look at my website, I've written something there about men and boys and the damage we do with boys, where we don't use empathic language with them, and it's like man up and grow some balls and don't be a wimp. And so boys especially are growing up to be very anxious, stressed, depressed men, and the statistics around men and suicide and homeless, etc., etc., but it's all on there. And it all starts with children and their absolute basic needs, really. Right, so yeah, the chaos of their lives needs to be addressed. I've just put something up there about children's rights that really you can sort of have a look at in your own time. Governmental laws, what we should do for children, what the United Nations feels, the BACP. You can read that at your leisure just to save a bit of time. Okay, distress. So children are going to come to therapy because there's something that is distressing them. And when you think of children and their distress, that's just a definition I took out of the English dictionary, Oxford Dictionary. And how it talks about distress or anguish, it affects the body so much. There's so much sort of research on how what goes on in your head affects your body. If you think of how many of your clients come to you and they might have tummy problems or panic attacks, and or they get headaches, or and there's a lot of research about how stored up and repressed issues from way back when can be the causes of things like MS or, you know, acute sort of, yeah, even cancers, whatever you name it, it can be a link and a connection. So children can be anxious and scared and feel sick, or mum, I don't feel like going to school, I don't feel well. So it all causes this. Yeah, it stops a child being happy, playful, and so on. So in looking at distress, what are some of the things that could affect a child under 10 and lead them to feel distressed? Just any
divorce,
absolutely, yeah.
Bereavement.
Sorry?
Bereavement.
Absolutely, bereavement. Yeah.
Birth of a brother or sister.
Yeah, absolutely.
School bullying.
Very much school bullying, yeah.
Pressure from the family to be something that they're not.
Yes, all those expectations that can be placed on you, yeah. So, there are a million and one things that can cause distress. What's interesting, I think, is that there are all these things that can be an identifiable trauma. So, this happened to you, so bereavement, divorce, and so on. But I think there are a lot of more minor things that eventually build up and become very traumatizing to a child and then can impact in adult life if it's not processed. So little things that happen, but they're not acknowledged, they're not validated, and often there's a feature in some families where nothing's spoken about, nothing's acknowledged, and so the child starts to question, was there something to be upset about? No, maybe it wasn't. I'm just making it up. I'm being silly and so on. So that non-acknowledgement of stuff and processing of things really can be so terribly unhelpful for a child. I want to just take a few moments now. If in pairs, if you would think and chat, you're going to get 5 minutes each to just think about some distressing incident that happened to you in your childhood. I'm not going to ask you to share it unless you want to. So it's between you as a pair. And what I want you to think about is describe to the person you're working with what that trauma was. And it may not have felt like a trauma at the time because it may have been minimized. But something that upset you. And I want you then to think about what was the response to you. Was it favorable? Were you scooped up and looked after? Did you have to just get on with it? And think about also why it is that you remember that event. So what was it around that event that made it something that was distressing for you? Okay, so if you just work in pairs, if there's an odd person, then someone can work with me. So I'll give you 5 minutes each. I will time it and then I'll tell you to swap over. And then we'll come back and share in the room. Okay.